Okay. Please turn your Bible to Esther. As we said when we ended with Nehemiah, that was the very end of the history, recorded history in the Old Testament, at the end of Nehemiah. Esther, in the order of the books in our Old Testament, is a book right after Nehemiah. But it's about a period of time that occurs during Ezra and Nehemiah, okay? So it's between the first wave of exiles returning from the Persian Empire and the subsequent waves that come. So that's where we're kind of backtracking a little bit within the history. It is a historical book, but it actually occurs in the middle of the history that's recorded in Ezra and Nehemiah. And I titled it there, The Invisible Hand of Providence. When you think of the Westminster Shorter Catechism, what are God's works of providence? God's works of providence are His most holy, wise, and powerful, preserving and governing all His creatures and all their actions. And that's really the story of Esther. I put there, it takes place during the reign of the Persian king Xerxes I, who reigned from 485 to 464 BC, and that's during the middle of the history that's recorded in Ezra and Nehemiah. And it really centers around this. Around 480 BC, the Jews in the Persian Empire faced a royal edict, an imperial edict, a royal order, a kingly order, calling for their deaths and property confiscation. If you'll turn to chapter 3, verses 12 through 15. Chapter 3, verses 12 through 15. Hear now the word of God. Then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded. Now we'll get to this, but the king Xerxes, who in 1:1 he's referred to Ahasuerus. That's easier for me to pronounce Xerxes. Goes by both names. But that's the, if you hear Xerxes the first, it was Artaxerxes who took his place, his son later on, that was involved in the history of Ezra and Nehemiah. So, Xerxes' scribes were called. On the 13th day of the first month, a decree was written according to all that Haman, and we will get to who Haman is. The king had granted him the authority to issue a royal edict, a royal command. To the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all people, to every province according to its script, and to every people in their language. The Persian Empire had many people in different languages. In the name of King say Xerxes the first, there it was written and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, and little children and women, in one day, on a future date, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. So we'll get to that. This is, the edict is regarding a future date. Okay? And in God's providence, it was the 12th month, a very long future date that gave time for lots of things to happen in between. It just so happened to be a very long future date, and we'll get to how that happened too. A copy of the document was to be published as law in every province, being published for all people, that they should be ready for that day. Because it's a future day. So the king's edict, the king's command, that on that date, that's when the Jews were fair game to be killed and their property confiscated. but it's a future date is when the edict becomes effective. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. And that kind of sets the stage, okay, as to, you say, okay, well, how did all of this take place? And that's what we'll get to in chapter 1. Before we get to chapter 1 there, and look, I have some quotes here. Matthew Henry, though the name of God be not in it, now that's something to take note. The name of God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. The finger of God is, though, directing every minute, every small event for the bringing about of his people's deliverance. And you think this is Matthew Henry talking about the finger of God, right? And in God's providence, Pastor Ron just went through Exodus 8, 16 through 19 on the finger of God, right? And if you remember there with the plague where the dust or the small sand, the dust was turned into what? Small lice or gnats. So dealing with small things, right? So you think the invisible hand of God moves things, right? We grab things, we move things, but the finger, you're able to move very small things with your finger. And that's where it could be why that's mentioned in Exodus 8, 16 through 19, dealing with the dust and the little gnats. God's providence that occurred by the very finger of God. And that's what Henry's getting at here, that very small events in this story, and I want to bring them out and stress, okay? And I'm doing something a little different in my study tonight. Normally I write up very thick notes, right, on each, going through each chapter and kind of looking through the main things. I'm not doing it this time. I'm going to do a lot of reading, and I'm going to point out certain things in the text, because this is a story, and you have to read the story. So we're not going to read it all, but we're going to read a lot of it tonight. Lord willing. And I want to point out certain things to make notes of in your Bible, to point out, circle and underline certain things where, wow, that's very providential, that this happened this way or that happened that way. Or you see what I'm getting at? You have to read the story. It's all in the minute small events of the story. And until we read the story and the small events, you don't see the big picture of this, of the hand of God, the very finger of God governing all of these things. C.H. Spurgeon also said this: there is as much providence in the creeping of an aphid, very small insect, upon a rose leaf, as in the marching of an army to ravage a continent. He knows the very hairs on your head right now, right? Something very small, tiny. Yeah. I know one of the people Connie works with, my wife, says it's only God's only involved in the big things. Literally told her that. Connie's like, what? Not biblical to say such things. C.H. Spurgeon said this: every child of God is where God has placed him for some purpose. And that's what we'll see tonight too. And we'll see it with more than just Esther, actually. Okay? And here's a secular proverb: large doors swing on small hinges. Has the idea again of, you think every time you see a door and you think the big door swinging, but it's on very small hinges. That the big events of the story are swinging on very small things that God's controlling. He's controlling all of it, down to the very smallest thing with his finger. Has that picture. Okay. So, I'm going to point out a couple of things in the first couple of chapters. We'll jump through a little bit here, and then I'm going to start reading in chapter 3. So, in chapter 1, the king is laid out there in chapter 1:1. Ahasuerus, King Xerxes the first, is the one ruling in Persia, and as it states, there are over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. Persian Empire was huge. 127 different provinces over a very large area. if you look down in verse 12, chapter 1, verse 12, the king, Xerxes I, has a queen. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command. He had commanded her to come, and she refused. She refused to come at the king's command brought by his eunuchs. Therefore, the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. Look down at verses 19 and 20. Here we've got where Queen Vashti is removed or divorced. And we'll see the reason here is so that all wives will honor their husbands. Look here at verses 19 and 20. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out from him, and let it be recorded in the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it will not be altered, that Vashti shall come no more before King Xerxes I, and let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she, one who will be obedient to her husband. Verse 20, when the king's decree, which he will make, is proclaimed throughout all his empire, for it is great, all wives will honor their husbands, both great and small. That's the concern. Because she didn't honor and obey her husband, right? Now, what's interesting, this is an example you could put in the margin, Romans 2, 14 and 15. This is a pagan king in a pagan empire, and it's written on their hearts from the Ten Commandments, right? Dealing with authority, dealing with husbands and wives. And it's written on the heart, really, when you think about it, of that wives should honor and submit to their husbands. It's really interesting. God's law written on their hearts. Okay. So he's going to look for another queen, right? If you look at chapter 2, verse 2, then the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king. He's looking for another queen, another wife. Look at chapter 2, verse 7. Here we've got Mordecai. He's one of the characters, main characters of Esther. Had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther. So Mordecai had brought up Esther, his uncle's daughter. For she had neither father nor mother. Esther was orphaned. And her Mordecai is the one raising her. Look what it says about her. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. Now, in God's providence, she just happened to be very beautiful. She could have been a very ugly lady. In God's providence, she was lovely and beautiful. Now, Esther had not revealed her people or family. Look down at verse 10. Esther had not revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. So he did not, he wanted her to conceal that she was a Jew, which she did conceal and not declare to the king. If you look down at the end of verse 15, Esther, the very end of the verse, verse 15, Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. And then verse 16 and 17, chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. So Esther was taken to King Xerxes into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Now, think about that a minute. In God's providence, she was lovely and beautiful. In God's providence, she obtained grace and favor in his sight. He could have picked a different woman to be queen. Just so happened to be her, right, at this point. Now look at where the story goes here. Chapter 2, verses 19 to 23. When virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, here's one day he just happens to be sitting at the king's gate at a particular time. And what does he hear? Two of the king's eunuchs, Bethan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Xerxes I. In other words, they want to kill him. Now, I put up there, his reign is 485 to 464 BC. Right? See that? He did get assassinated, actually, in 464. Eventually, someone got him. But not now, not here. So the matter became known to Mordecai in verse 22, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. Okay? Of this plot to kill the king, of eunuchs that are in the king's court. Okay? They get close to him. Verse 23, and when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. Now listen, look here carefully. There's another one to write this, make a note, and to make note of. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. It just so happened in God's providence that it was written in the Chronicles, the record of the king. It didn't have to be, but it was. It's very important. Okay? Just so happened he overheard this sitting by the gate one day, and he told Esther, who told the king. The king found out, yeah, this is true. These two guys want to kill me. So he had those two hanged at the gallows, put to death. And it happened to be recorded in God's providence in the Chronicles, the book of Chronicles for the king, the book of record. Okay? Okay, chapter 3. I'm going to read chapter 3 here. After these things, King Xerxes I promoted Haman. Now here's another character. He's behind that edict to kill the Jews and confiscate their property. He's bad, okay? And he promoted, though, the king here promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. He would not honor this Haman for some reason. Okay? Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" Now it happened when they spoke to him daily, and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman, to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. Now it could be then that Haman hated the Jews. And Mordecai said, "I am not going to honor that man who hates Jews." When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay homage, pay him honor, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes I, the people of Mordecai. the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Xerxes, look here, they cast Pur, that is the lot. What is that? That's casting dice. Dice with numbers on it, right? Like numbers for each month of the year. Before Haman, to determine the day and the month until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. It was almost a year away. Almost a year away. In God's providence, the lot fell on the 12th month, almost a year away. Proverbs 16:33. The lot is cast into the lap, its every decision is from the Lord. And that's how he determined the month of that edict, when it would take place. They cast lots. Could have been the very next day, you know, right? Or the next month. But no, it came up the 12th month. Then Haman said to Xerxes, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, the money and the people are given to you to do with them as it seems good to you. So the king is kind of complicit in this. It's not good of the king, Xerxes, saying, okay, fine, drop the edict. And that's why I read verses 12 through 15, the edict to kill every last one of them. But it will take effect upon the date, the month, that was cast by lot. And God is sovereign over that, right? And it happened to be almost a year away, so it gave time for lots of things to occur first before that date when the edict would come where Jews could be openly killed and their property confiscated. Now I want to say this too. Keep your finger there and look at chapter 8, verse 8. About king's edicts. Verse 8. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal with the king's signet ring, for whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. Okay? That's what's key here. Okay, we'll get to this later decree later. But the important thing is this decree, go back to chapter 3, verses 12 through 15. It cannot be revoked. Does everyone know what that means? It cannot be changed. It cannot be taken back. Because once that edict is there, it's final. It can never be changed. It can never be taken away. It cannot be erased. So here we've got a dilemma then, right? It does not look good. Here we've got this king edict that Haman wrote with the king's signet ring, and it can't be changed. It can't be erased. And the Jews, they can be openly killed in the 12th month that's coming up, okay? Yes. Yeah, put Daniel in the lion's den. Okay, so that's something very common with king's edicts. Okay. So the question's going to be, who's going to save them, right? That's our question. Who is going to save them? So, chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. So he hears the decree and Mordecai grieves. Verse 2, he went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was a great mourning among the Jews with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai, to learn what and why this was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the city square that was in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, and that he might command her to go into the king to make supplication to him and plead before him for her people. So Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. In other words, she's worried she's going to die if she goes in there, right? So they told Mordecai Esther's words, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther. In verse 13, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. Underline that, bold it, circle it. Here you've got faith of Mordecai that God will deliver them, even if it's not through Esther, through some other way. Right? He has faith that God will provide deliverance. God is never mentioned in Esther. But obviously it's implied right there. Relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. He knows God will do it. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Right? That's what we've got here. Every child of God is where God has placed him for some purpose. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? For some reason, she was lovely and beautiful. For some reason in God's providence, the king looked favorably upon her and picked her, this poor little young woman, to be the queen of this huge empire, the Persian Empire. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, verse 16, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I will perish. Note this too. Bold it, circle it, underline it. Fast for me, my maids and I will fast likewise. Fasting in Scripture always goes with prayer. Always goes with prayer. Just a couple of examples. You can write it in the margin. Matthew chapter 17, verse 21. Matthew chapter 17, verse 21. Or you could write down 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5. Prayer and fasting. Prayer and fasting go together. So what do you have here? You've got her faith mentioned. Really, it's implied. We're going to fast and do what? What's implied? Pray. Pray hard. Say, this is so important to me, dear Lord. I'm not eating. I'm not drinking. I'm calling out to you for help. When I go into the king, may he move his golden scepter and grant me permission rather than die. Right? But if I perish, I perish. She's willing to die, but she's praying not to. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Okay, chapter 5. Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house. Well, the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house facing the entrance of the house. So it was, when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that she found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Ah, she's got permission. She's not going to die. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request?" "It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom." In God's providence, she found favor, and he's willing to say, "Well, what's your request? I'll even give you up to half the kingdom." In God's providence. So Esther answered, "If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him." Now, why she doesn't ask right there, we don't know. Scholars don't know why she didn't bring it up right there about the Jews and the edict and all of that. She doesn't request that right away. Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition?" "It shall be granted you." "What is your request?" "Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." Then Esther answered and said, "My petition request is this: if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." She put it off a day. Why did she do that? We don't know. In God's providence, she put it off a day. Verse 9. So Haman went out that day, joyful and with a glad heart, this evil man. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation, filled with anger against Mordecai. So he's all happy. He's going to have a banquet with the king, right? Then he comes out, and Mordecai, oh, this Mordecai who won't give him homage and honor. Verse 10, nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he went and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and servants of the king. In God's providence, Haman, in his sinful pride, is telling his friends and his wife all these things. Moreover, Haman, because they will give him certain advice in return, as we will see. Moreover, verse 12, Haman said, "Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared, and tomorrow I am again invited by her along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife, verse 14, Zeresh and all his friends said to him, so they give him certain advice, right, in God's providence. "Let a gallows be made." So build your own gallows that hangs people, puts them to death. Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. And then go merrily with the king to the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Gallows he makes now to have Mordecai hanged on, right? Chapter 6. That night the king could not sleep. That very night, in God's providence, the king had trouble sleeping. In God's providence, he could have slept great, but he didn't. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles. And they were read before the king. He could, by God's providence, he couldn't sleep. By God's providence, oh, bring me the Chronicles and the records. Let me listen to that read back to me. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthathana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Xerxes I. Then the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" He doesn't know. He says, you know, a person like this should receive honor. they should get some dignity and honor for this in return, a reward. And the king's servants who attended him said, nothing has been done for him. So it just so happens, he can't sleep in God's providence. It just so happens they bring in the records to just read unto him, hopefully put him back to sleep and whatever. And he listens about how Mordecai had shared what he had heard at the king's gates with Esther, who the plot to kill him. He's like, hey, has anything been done for this person? You know, for this great deed? And they said, nothing's been done for him. So the king said, who is in the court? At that moment, in God's providence, Haman had just entered the outer court. At that moment, in God's providence. Now, Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. That was why he came. I want Mordecai to hang on those gallows I just built that my wife and friends suggested. The king's servant said to him, Haman is there standing in the court, and the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king asked him, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? In God's providence, King Xerxes I did not say, Mordecai, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, whom would the king delight to honor more than me? So in God's providence, the king did not state it was Mordecai that he was thinking about. So Haman, in general terms, thinking, oh, it must be me. It must be me. I'm such a great person. And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, verse 8, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robe and the horse as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. So here he's letting him know it's Mordecai that he was thinking about. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken. Oh. So Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, this guy he hates, and led him on horseback through the city square and proclaimed before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. In God's providence, it was Mordecai. Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house mourning and with his head covered. He couldn't believe it. Verse 13, when Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. It's interesting. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So Haman here is privately humiliated. He's privately humiliated with his wife and his friends there because he lets them know what had happened there. So without knowing any of this, Esther, she's been preparing for the banquet with all this other stuff that's happening in the humiliation of Haman and the honoring of Mordecai. Chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dine with Esther, Queen Esther. And on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king said again to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you, and what is your request? Up to half the kingdom it shall be done. Then Queen Esther answered and said, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, at my people, at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. So King Xerxes I here answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he and where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? As if he didn't know what Haman had done with his signet ring, making a royal edict. And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Then the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. When the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. He was pleading for his life. He had fallen in front of her pleading for his life. Then the king said, will he also assault the queen while I am in the house? He's thinking Haman's going after the queen, trying to assault her, yet he was pleading for his life. In God's providence, here again, in God's providence, it's exactly when the king returned, was when Haman had thrown himself pleading for his life, and it made it certainly look like he was assaulting the queen. As the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Verse 9, now Harbona, one of the king's eunuchs, said to the king, look, the gallows. Look, there's gallows over there. 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Talk about God's providence. The very gallows that Haman had prepared to hang Mordecai on, Haman hung on and died. Then the king's wrath subsided. Chapter 8. On that day, King Xerxes I gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. So she gets what had been his, all of his property. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people, or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? Then King Xerxes I said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, indeed I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows which he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring, for whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. Now that's where she had asked for the original one to be revoked, but it can't. So he's like, okay, make another one that's going to deal with it in some way or another. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And as it was written, according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the province, princes of the provinces, from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. And he wrote in the name of King Xerxes I, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses bred with swift steeds. By these letters the king permitted the Jews, this is the decree then, to deal with it. By these letters the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect themselves. Talking about self-defense, the right of self-defense. To protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. On one day in all the provinces of King Xerxes I, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. That 12th month, remember, that was chosen by lot, right? So that I'm saying on the very same day that that first edict kicks in, this one kicks in, giving the Jews the right of self-defense by the king's order. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province and published for all the people, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan the citadel. So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and the decree went, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews, because fear of the Jews fell upon them. And then it goes on in chapter 9. It says, now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Xerxes I to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could withstand them, because fear of them fell upon all people. And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews, because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For this man Mordecai became increasingly prominent. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. And in Shushan the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. I'll go on there to verse 10. The 10 sons of Haman, the son of Haman, Hamadatha, the enemy of the Jews, the 10 sons of Haman there, they killed, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. You could see the sons of Ammon wanting revenge. Well, they took care of that. Verse 11, on that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan the citadel was brought to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel and the 10 sons of Ammon. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your petition? It shall be granted to you. Or what is your further request? It shall be done. Then Esther said, if it pleases the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do again tomorrow according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows. So the king commanded this to be done. The decree was issued in Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men at Shushan, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. Remember, the second edict allowed them to take the plunder, but they didn't, the possessions. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. And then you see there it gets into the Feast of Purim. The Feast of Purim, of gladness and celebration. The Feast of Lots. Pur, that word is for lots, right? The Feast of Lots, of how the date was picked for the first edict. Look at verse 24 of chapter 9. Because Haman, the son of Hamadatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate them, cast Pur, that is the lot, to consume them and destroy them on that particular date. So this is an annual feast of the Jews, the Feast of Purim, the Feast of Lots. And the Jewish year begins in April, in the spring, with Passover. And they have many feasts throughout the year. Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is in the fall. The Feast of Lots, Purim, is the last festival of their year, it's in March. The end of the year begins in April. And it reminds the Jews that God will preserve them. The very last festival of their annual festivals is the Feast of Purim, and reminding them that God will preserve them against their enemies. And how? Through his invisible hand or his finger. Governing all the events of time and space. Governing all his creatures and all their actions. Let me turn this around and we'll end on this here. I'll say this real quick. The Feast of Purim, I was doing some reading on that. I guess they reread Esther. We read a lot of it tonight. We read most of it tonight. At the Feast of Purim, they'll be at their various synagogues, tabernacles, and the Jews will sit down and they'll read Esther. And whenever Haman, they're very vocal and active. When Haman gets mentioned, boo, boo, they stomp their... But whenever Mordecai is mentioned, they're like, woo, all right, woo! They're real excited and get involved. It's a real interesting feast, I guess. Did you? So it's real fascinating. But that's where that's where I was thinking in my mind, you got to read the story. You do. To really make sense of all of this, of the hand of the very finger of God, the hand of God's providence, governing all things, all creatures and all their actions down to the smallest details, and God making sure that he's punishing his enemies in all this. Haman gets punished, right? As we just read in 9:1 through 17, Haman's sons, all their enemies gets punished through their self-defense. God always, though, delivers his people. So Esther is a long illustration of Romans 8:28. God works all things together for good to those that love him and are called according to his purpose. People may mean certain things for evil, but God means it for good. Esther, her name is related to the Hebrew word for star. And she is like the Star of Bethlehem, pointing to the ultimate deliverer, Jesus Christ. Which is interesting to think about Esther. I was just reading, sharing with Pastor Ron earlier today, an article in the Washington Times. And our society today is more and more resembling a pagan society. That right now, during certain surveys are showing that 40% of 18 to 22-year-olds in America, the United States of America, 40% of 18 to 22-year-olds know nothing about the Bible. Nothing. They couldn't tell you about the parable of the Good Samaritan. Nothing. Esther, nothing. And among the total population, it could be as high as 26-27% of all people know nothing in America right now, 1 in 4. And we think about Psalm 1 that we read tonight in our recitative reading, about meditating upon God's word day and night, right? That we will be like a tree planted by streams of living water. And we've got such a society with more and more that's increasing 1% a year, they think, right now. since around the year 2010, of more and more fools running around, standing in the path of sinners, sitting in the seat of scoffers, etc. Isaiah 4:6. Amen. Yeah. And that's why Esther, when we think, I keep thinking about that when I was reading that article, and I think, you know, we at Grace Baptist Church, as you know, we have multiple Bible studies a week, right? And our focus is Bible, Bible, Bible. Whether it's Sunday morning worship, Sunday evening, Sunday school classes for adults all the way to the little children, to Wednesday evening, to youth group Friday nights, to ESL Saturday mornings. And you study something like this, the God who is the God of Esther and Mordecai is the God of us. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is over all things. He works all things after the counsel of his will. All things, Ephesians 1:11. God's works of providence are his most holy, wise, and powerful, preserving of all his creatures and all their actions. In our lives, God is involved just as intricately in our lives as he is for Esther and Mordecai. It is great comfort for you and I. And when you're thinking about details in life, the very small details, large doors swing on small hinges. And our God is in charge of all things, for his glory and our good. What a glorious truth. Pastor Ron?